It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to this week's podcast. Today we have Adventure. It's about 90 minutes of it, starting off with The Green Hornet and The Corpse That Wasn't. And we'll have A Man Called X and Mysterious Traveler, so stay tuned for that. But right now, The Green Hornet.
The Green Hornet. He hunts the biggest of all game, public enemies who try to destroy our America. With his faithful valet, Cato, Britt Reed, daring young publisher, matches wits with racketeers and saboteurs, risking his life that criminals and enemy spies will feel the weight of the law by the sting of the Green Hornet. Ride with Britt Reed in the thrilling adventure, The Corpse That Wasn't There. The Green Hornet strikes again. Miss Case and Ed Lowry were returning to the Daily Sentinel after lunch. The streets were crowded, and as they took their last corner, a man hurrying from the opposite direction ran into them.
Oh, excuse me, I'm in a hurry.
Hey, why don't you watch where you're going, you...
I tell you, Casey, sometimes I think they need traffic lights on the sidewalk, too. Are you okay?
Yes, except for my handbag.
Oh, wait, here it is on the sidewalk. Hey, this yours, too?
What?
This letter.
No, it's not mine. It's already been mailed, hasn't it?
Yeah. Mailed and unsealed.
Lowry, never mind your reporter instincts. Not right to look at other people's mail.
Well, nuts, I wasn't going to open it. Well, what do we do with it? Throw it away?
It may be important.
Mr. Ernest Kegler. It's probably the joker who bumped into you. Well, why should we bother with it?
Oh, give it to me, Lowry. I'll call him up from the office. Look at the time. We'd better hurry.
Hello, Miss Case.
Oh, good afternoon, Mr. Reed.
Anything important?
No, it's been pretty quiet all morning. Here's your mail.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, let's... Wait, this one. This isn't mine, Miss Case.
Oh, yes, that's a letter that someone dropped on the street. I've been trying to reach him by phone. Do you mind if I try now?
Oh, no, go right ahead. I'll glance at my letter.
Hello, switchboard. Yes, this is Lenore, Helen. Will you try that number again? It's a... Yes, that's right.
It's a letter from Clicker Benny. She's a second officer in the WAX now.
Uh-huh, in North Africa.
Have that posted on the bulletin board, huh?
Yes, sir. Yes, Helen. Oh. Hello, Kay, thanks. Maybe he does work in a factory or someplace. No, I won't bother. Goodbye. Still no answer.
Why not just put it in an envelope and send it to him?
I guess that's the easiest thing.
Hey, wait a minute. Is this the address?
Yes.
It's right on my way home. I'll tell you what, Miss Case. I'll drop it off there myself. How's that?
There's house. I come back in one moment.
Well, that didn't take you long. Cato, you've still got the letter.
Mr. Britt, please. I see something through the window. You come look.
What's that?
Please, you come with me.
All right.
Look there. You see?
Well, I'll be... Cato, try the door.
Oh, it's unlocked, Mr. Britt.
Watch out. Easy now.
What do you think, Mr. Britt?
Well, it's obvious. All we needed was one look. Where's the phone?
On the table. What's the matter?
I don't get a dial tone, Cato. Cato, this telephone wire's been cut.
Oh, that's very bad.
I'll get to the nearest phone and call the police. You stay here, Cato.
Oh, this is very sad. Too bad for him.
Yes.
Oh, that's Mr. Britt. Hello? Mr. Britt? Mr. Britt, that you? Mr. Britt!
Get him!
What?
Now, get busy.
Cato, you're all right. Come on, you're all right. That's it. Come on now.
Oh, Mr. Britt, what happened?
Well, that's what I want to know. I found you in the hall when we got here. Got a bump on the top of your head like an egg. Looks like a blackjack. Who was it?
I don't know.
What happened?
Well, I wait in the room, like you say. Then I hear a door close. I think it's you. I call and come out. Mr. Britt, I hear voices.
Hmm?
Voices back in the room. Who are they?
Well, they're just the police, Cato. They're checking on the body. Forget it. Now, go on. You came out this door. And then what?
Somebody close by me say, get him. I try to see who it is, but something hit me on the head. That's all. Oh, that's all except... Where is the letter?
The letter we came here to deliver? Well, you had it.
I have it no more. Letter's gone.
So that's what they wanted.
Hey, Mr. Reed. Mr. Reed.
Oh, yes, what is it, officer?
Say, what kind of a joke is this?
Joke? Murder's no joke.
Sure, that's what I mean. What was the idea of calling up the police and having all this...
Yeah, what are you going to... What are you people doing in my house? What are those cars outside the door?
Who are you?
Who am I? I live here. My name is Ernest Kegler. What does this mean? I come home...
Now,
I...
just a moment, Mr. Kegler. My name is Reed. I am publisher of the Daily Sentinel. Tell me, what's a dead man doing in your living room?
What kind of privacy can I put... What's that? A dead man in my living room?
Yes. Murdered.
Now,
hold on. Wait a minute. One thing at a time. One thing at a time. Mr. Reed, if you're playing a joke, you're carrying it too far.
Joke? What are you talking about?
I'll tell you what I'm talking about. Take a look in that room. There's no murdered man. There's nobody at all.
Right, Miss Case. I hadn't noticed myself. When I got back there, Cato was lying in the hall. I didn't go into the living room at all. The police went in.
It's the strangest thing I ever heard of, Mr. Reed.
The body was gone. No trace of it. If it hadn't been for the broken telephone wire, I might have believed it was a dream.
And Cato and you both had the same dream. Well, what are the police going to do? Take you to a psychiatrist?
Oh, not quite. After all, they realized I wouldn't phone about nothing. They've decided that Cato and I walked in on a practical joke.
Someone was just playing dead.
That's it.
And got up and beat it after Cato left the room, I suppose. And what about using a blackjack on Cato? Was that to make the joke more practical?
Well, they haven't figured that one out yet.
Oh, good grief. All this because you delivered a lost letter.
Well, that reminds me. The letter was gone, too. Cato had it, and then when he...
Hello, boss. Hi, Casey.
Hello, Laurie.
Well, Laurie.
I drew a blank, boss.
You stayed with the police, didn't you?
Sure, and like you said, I hung right on their shoulders while they checked up on this Ernest Kegler guy, the one who owned the house.
Well, that's on the level. It is his house?
He's on the level all the way. Name's Ernest Kegler. He does own the house, and he's even got fingerprint proof of identification.
Fingerprints, Mr. Reed? A criminal record?
Nuts, Casey. Don't jump the gun. This guy works in a war plant. That's how he had fingerprints.
Oh.
Simon Pura.
As the driven snow. I don't know, boss. Maybe you and Cato walked in on a fraternity initiation.
It seems so. Now, somehow I was sure that when the police investigated Ernest Kegler, they'd run into something. Laura, you saw Kegler.
Yeah?
Did he look like the man who bumped into Miss Case on the street?
Well, I don't know. I didn't get a close look that time. I asked Kegler about a letter, and he said, yes, he'd lost one, but it wasn't important.
Well, it looks like the end of what might have been a good story for the Sentinel. I'll see you later, Miss Case.
But, Mr. Reed, you just arrived.
And now I'm leaving. I'll tell you something else. Kegler and the man I saw lying on the floor looked almost like twins. Goodbye.
Holy mackerel. Say, Casey, maybe the boss is crazy.
Mr. Britt, I think about it all day. If it were not for a bump on my head, I would not be sure.
You and I are the only ones who are positive, Cato. And with that letter missing...
Yes?
There's something strange going on, I'm sure of it.
Yes, sir.
We've been wrong before. We may be wrong again. But at least we're going to find out.
Hmm?
There's no use sitting around talking about it. Maybe we can use the role of the Green Hornet. Get the mask and the gas gun. We're taking the Black Beauty.
A few seconds later, stepping through a secret panel in the rear of a closet in his bedroom, Britt Reed and Cato went along a narrow passage built within the wall of the apartment house itself. This passage led to an adjoining building which fronted on a dark side street. Though supposedly abandoned, this building served as the hiding place for the sleek, super-powered Black Beauty, streamlined car of the Green Hornet. Britt Reed pressed a button. The great car roared into life. A section of the wall in front raised automatically, then dropped into place as the gleaming Black Beauty sped into the darkness.
We go, Mr. Britt.
Same place, Kato. To Kegler's home.
Where is this?
Kegler's house is down at the far end of the block. We can leave the Black Beauty here in the alley. Here's the street. It's good and dark. We won't be... Cato. Did you see that?
Yes, sir. Somebody go in Kegler's front door.
It looked like Lowry. I might have known. Lowry's a swell reporter. He always keeps digging.
Yes. But in this case, that's not so good for us, no?
It might turn out all right, Cato. In fact, it might be very helpful. Come on. We'll get into that house quietly. We'll be there when Lowry leaves. We might get something.
No, there isn't anything special I want to see about Mr. Kegler, but I just can't help feeling that the boss did run into something. He's a level-headed guy.
Yes, I understand. I read the Sentinel myself, a good newspaper.
He just stopped off to do you a favor and return that letter.
Huh?
The one you dropped when we bumped, remember?
Oh, yes, but it wasn't important. Please, why don't you forget the whole thing?
Oh, you know us reporters.
Maybe there was somebody here. I don't know. Maybe it was a practical joke. But whatever it was or wasn't, it's over and done with.
Okay. Say, so you've got your letter, haven't you?
No, I haven't.
Oh, yes, that's right. Well, good night.
Yeah, I'll show you to the door.
Oh, you don't have to do that.
I'll go speak some time more.
Go into the door, Cato.
Yes, sir. We'll learn nothing yet.
Cato, back behind the drapes.
Hello. Kegler talking. A reporter was here. I'm worried. But I... All right, if you say so. Yes? Yes, I understand. Yes, nothing to worry about. The what? All right, I'll destroy the letter at once. Goodbye.
Okay, Kegler, hand over that letter.
Good.
Look out! He has gun.
Mr. house in the suburbs on the other side of the city from Kegler's home, a man named Bolton hung up the phone and crossed to another room.
Who was that on the phone, Bolton?
It was Kegler.
Oh?
Yeah. Reporter from the Sentinel was nosing around again. I told him to forget it. Nothing's going to go wrong.
He's nervous, hmm?
Well, you can't blame him. It was pretty close.
Yes. It's a lucky thing that fellow he sloped had the letter. I lifted it right from his hand.
Yeah, I told Kegler to burn it. We read it already.
Yes. Say, we've got to do something about, that dead man.
Sure, sure.
Maybe the river.
Oh, shut up, will you? I'm thinking.
Hey, where now?
I want to double check. I'm going to call Kegel and make sure he burned that letter. It's 5 minutes. He's had plenty of time.
That letter would mean our finish if it got in the wrong hands.
Yeah. Huh. It's funny. No answer. Wonder what happened.
Still no answer?
Yeah, still no answer. How many times is that?
I don't know. 10, maybe.
It's been almost an hour.
Maybe he went out.
Sure he went out. But why? It's almost midnight. He said nothing to me on the phone about going...
Hey.
Yeah, come on. You came here.
Yes.
Well, where you been? I've been calling you.
I didn't burn the letter, Bolton. And there's somebody who knows about it.
Now, what's eating you?
Come in here. It's dark out there. Come on in. All right, now, let's have it. What happened to the letter, and what do you mean somebody knows about it?
I can tell you, Bolton.
Your mask.
The Green Hornet. Drop it. Leave it there. Reach for that gun, and I pull this trigger.
Hey, what's this all about? Kegel, are you pulling a fast
one? Don't blame him. He shot at me. It's just his tough luck that he missed, that's all. Now, how much is this letter worth, Bolton?
Nothing. Why?
And what happened to the man who was killed in Kegler's house?
What about the man?
Button your lip, Mannheim.
Don't kid me, Bolton. You've covered up pretty fast, but I've got ways of finding things out. Who was that dead man?
You're off the beam.
Was he somebody who knew your setup? Or maybe this Kegler's a fake. Maybe the dead man was the real Kegler.
You're pretty smart, aren't you?
The police might think so.
Don't give me that. You're the Hornet. You wouldn't go to the police.
If I can't get it from you, maybe I can get it from your stooge here. Come on, Kegler. Come on, we'll let Bolton think about it.
Stay here, Kegler.
He's coming with me.
No, he's not. I don't think you can handle him the right way. Me and Mannheim can do that. We'll stick. Now get that gun.
Out one side. I can't shoot. You won't get a chance. I'll take it one side, Kegler.
Gas. Mannheim. Get him. Gas. Get him.
That gun, it didn't make a sound.
Okay, Kegler, come along. And close your mouth. You look like a fish. Back there.
The garage.
All right. You go first. We'll take the driveway.
Hello.
Right here.
I find out.
Wait, just a moment. Kegler.
Yes?
Walk up to the garage. Stand there with your back to us. And remember, you make a perfect target against that white background. So don't try anything. Well, what is it?
Mr. Britt. I look in the garage.
Well?
I look in the back. There's a big, heavy trunk. You were right, Mr. Britt.
I was, huh? Fine, fine. That's all I want to know. Now we'll leave a note for Bolton and Mannheim. And we'll see that Kegler gets back to his home. And keeps his mouth shut until tomorrow night.
Mannheim. Mannheim, wake up. Come on, snap out of it. Come on, wake up.
There's my gun. Where's my gun? Oh, it's you. Is he gone?
Yeah, him and Kegler both. I found this.
It's got the Hornet seal on it.
That's right.
I'll give you one more chance to talk money. Don't try anything till I call. You will be watched.
I guess he means business.
Yes. What about the garage?
Well, we better do like he says, Mannheim. We just sit tight and wait.
Hello? Yes. This is Kegler. No, I'm sorry. I won't be to work today. No, I'm not feeling well. Goodbye. I'm not feeling well at all.
City room, Ed Lowry talking. What's that? What? Yeah, what about Kegler? Huh? Say, who is this? I said, who?
What is it, Lowry?
Some guy said if I wanted a story, I should go see Kegler again.
Again?
Yeah, tonight around midnight. And I don't even know who called.
Is that you, Bolton? I saw you last night, remember? That's right. Sure, stick around. I'll see you again. I'll say around 9 or 9:30. And no tricks this time. I haven't seen a thing.
He'll be around. He said so.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. I get the money for him, but
it's pretty tough.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
I wish we'd taken care of that, you know, in the trunk in the garage.
And have the Hornet find out about that?
Maybe he already knows.
Maybe. I'll tell you one thing we got to do.
You mean Kegler?
Yeah. He's scared silly. He's already talked to the Hornet. How much we don't know. But he might talk to the police if the pressure gets strong enough. We gotta take care of him.
Kill him, huh?
Yeah, we gotta do it soon. We can't go...
That's the back door. The Hornet?
Yeah, who else? Keep your gun out of sight, man.
Don't worry. I don't take chances with that fella. Well, what are you waiting for? Open the door.
Look at the glass, Mannheim.
It's his shadow.
No. Looks as if he's leaning right against her.
You can't tell. It's that glass that you can't see through.
There's something peculiar. Oh, well.
Look out! Bolton, it's the body from the trunk in the garage. Propped up against the door. Who put it there? How did it...
I did, Bolton.
The Hornet.
You know about it.
I want to know a lot more. Man's dressed something like Kegler. He looks like Kegler. Who was he? What was his name?
Forget it, Hornet. This doesn't concern
you. Am I mixed up in something? I want to know all about it. Oh, come on, who was he?
He's Kegler.
Kegler? Oh, I get it. You mean the real Kegler?
Yeah.
Your friend who calls himself Ernest Kegler?
He's...
Never mind, I can figure it. He took this man's place, didn't he? Took over his home. This man was kept a prisoner in his own house, isn't that right?
Yeah, that's it.
And when that newspaper publisher told the police he found a dead man there, this was the man he saw.
Yeah. That was while we were out of the house getting a car. And when we got back, we slugged the man we found there.
And took the body out fast. What was the reason for all that, Bolton?
Well, I wanted our man to get a job in a war plant. And by using this one's references, he got a good job.
Preparing for sabotage, eh?
Something like that.
But something went wrong, and you had to kill him.
A letter came with a code message. Somehow the real Kegler got hold of it. He got out of the house and was on his way to the police. He saw us trailing him and got scared. He dropped the letter.
We caught up with him a couple of blocks further on and took him back to the house. So that's why the letter was important.
Yeah. Look, Hornet, there's two things we gotta do. We need that letter, and we gotta take care of this body.
It'll cost you money.
Here, here. There's plenty. Well, I'll give you...
I'll take it all. Thanks. But what about your partner?
Kegler.
Okay, we'll call him that for convenience. He's nervous. He might spill everything.
Certainly. We gotta get rid of him.
Shut up, Mannheim. I was working on that, Hornet. I haven't got any ideas, but...
I have an idea, Bolton. I might as well earn this money. It's a good idea. How about making it look like murder and suicide?
Murder?
Yes, with your friend as the murderer who commits suicide. I'll explain it later.
When?
When we get to Kegler's house, of course. I suppose you take this man over there in your car. Now, no tricks. I'll be driving right behind you.
Close now, Mr. Britt.
Yes, they're turning the corner. No, don't follow them. Turn here in the alley. They'll stop at the house, all right. Now, come on. We'll go into that house the back way and be very careful. Lowry ought to be prowling around nearby.
Lowry, isn't that Kegler's house?
Yeah, Casey. It's too early for me to make my call. It's...
Well, look. There are two men going toward the front door. They're carrying another man.
Ah. Hey, that guy's either had one drink too many or... Holy mackerel. Wait here, Casey.
Lowry, where are you going?
I'll be right back. I'm going to look in a window. Casey.
What is it? What did you see?
Plenty. They're inside now. That man they were carrying was dead. He's on the living room floor. And the Hornet's there, too.
Good grief.
I'll keep watching. You get to a phone and get the cops here as fast as you can.
I don't understand why you brought him back here. I don't see why.
Okay, Kegler, I'll clear it up for you. Mannheim, give me your gun. Wipe the print off first.
Mm-hmm. Here you are.
Thanks. Kegler, this is the gun Mannheim used to kill that man. The idea is to use this gun on you, and then leave it in your hand.
Oh.
Yes. It'll appear that you murdered that man, and now that you've committed suicide.
No, Bolton, don't let him.
Shut up, Kegler. That's the way we want it. It makes us safe, get it? Then the Hornet gives us that letter. We burn it. And... Hey, what's that?
Police cops. They're outside.
Police? Hornet, hurry up. Shoot him. Shoot him.
I will, Bolton, but not with your gun, with mine. Take it, Kegler.
Oh, no.
Hey, what good's that? It's just gas. He'll wake
yes,
up.
Yes, Bolton. He'll wake up and talk to the police, and you'll go to jail.
Bolton, we've been fooled. Get him. Get him before
you're too late.
Shot. I can't breathe. I can't.
Hurry, Mr. Britt. Police.
Yes, Kate, about the back way. Remind me to send this money to the USO.
Break the door down.
All right. Come on.
In here, this room.
Well, I'll be. Are they all dead?
No, just one of them. I saw the whole thing from the window, Sarge. And unless I'm nuts, you'll have a spy story that'll hit the headlines.
That's fine. But what happened to the Green Hornet?
You've just heard the adventure, The Corpse That Wasn't There. These exciting dramas are sent to you each week at this same time. They're copyrighted features of the Green Hornet Incorporated. All characters, names, places, and incidents used in this drama are purely fictitious. Bob Heitz speaking.
And the excitement just continues here on the podcast this week. But we're going to switch gears slightly because we're now going to have a little espionage mixed into it with a man called X. This is from 1951 and it's called Stalin Plus 7.
The Man Called X, tonight starring John Lund, who is taking over during Herbert Marshall's illness. The Man Called X is a regular Friday night feature on NBC's five-show festival of comedy, music, mystery, and drama. Brought to you by RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music, first in television. And by the makers of Anacin for fast relief from pain of headache, neuritis, neuralgia. John Lund in The Man Called X. Wherever there is mystery, intrigue, romance, in all the strange and dangerous places of the world, there you will find The Man Called X. Here's a word from RCA Victor. Five in one. Five superb instruments in one great combination. That's what you get when you invest in RCA Victor's new television radio phonograph combination, the Rutland. Yes, here in one beautiful cabinet, you'll find big 17-inch RCA Victor million-proof television. Television that brings you clear, bright pictures. Steady pictures that are locked in place by RCA Victor's exclusive eyewitness picture synchronizer. You'll enjoy the latest and greatest RCA Victor AM and FM radio, plus two superb automatic record changers for recorded music at all three speeds. Yes, five superb instruments. And yet, because you pay for only one sound system, only one cabinet, their cost is far less than what you'd pay for comparable console instruments. So when you invest in a television set, insist on the best. Insist on RCA Victor Television. See and hear the Rutland and the many other fine RCA Victor television sets available now at your RCA Victor dealers. The news came over the press service teletypes early on a cheerful June morning. It was only one short paragraph in length, but its impact had immediate worldwide repercussions.
Dateline, Bucharest, Romania. Theodore Johnson, American businessman, arrested in Harsovia last week by Vladimir Boric of the Romanian Security Police, has confessed to being an American spy. Johnson's trial will be held in the People's Court in Bucharest 1 week from today.
And within 1 hour after the news broke, within the offices of the Bureau in New York City.
Something's got to be done about it, fast. Ted Johnson is as innocent as you are.
Sure, Bill, I know. But this involves the internal security of another country. It's not the Bureau's business.
Chief, it's the world's business. They forced that confession out of Johnson to whip up war hysteria against the United States.
I agree, Bill. I agree, 100%. But there's nothing we can do.
We can prove to the world that Johnson's innocent by getting him out of Romania.
What?
You know, Ted Johnson's wife tried to call Ken Thurston. But Ken laid up, I took the call. She told me Ted was in Istanbul, Turkey, on business.
Bill, as long as you're working for the Bureau, you've got to stay out of it.
Chief, you ought to read your mail a little more carefully.
Huh? My mail?
Yeah. One of your agents has just resigned. A fellow by the name of Bill Pringle.
Bill, you...
I'll see you around, Chief. That is, if you ever get to Istanbul.
Believe me, Mr. X. I mean, Mr. Pringle. You're one plenty smart cook you're taking me along. Nothing I don't know about that Istanbul place.
All right, Pagan. How about digging out the characters who handled the underground escape route from Romania?
That's a cinch. When it comes to the underground,
Yeah. There's an underground escape route in every country behind the Iron Curtain. For people who'd like a taste of liberty for a change. I want you to find out how they get out of Romania and into Turkey.
But believe me, Mr. Pringle, it's as good as did. I got friends who'll tell me anything. For a slight consideration, of course. Oh, shall we say, $100?
Okay.
Absolutely not. I wouldn't consider it for a penny less. You mean you'll pay?
Sure.
Well, okay. Okay. But why do you want to know about this escape route? We're not coming out of Romania.
That's right, Fagon. We're going in.
Could not have come to a more perfect, a more wonderful person with whom to discuss your difficulties, my darling, Mr. Pringle. I am Baron Laszlo Tagore at your services.
I'm glad to know you, Baron.
But of course, why should you not be? Now, why is it you have come to visit the magnificent Baron Tagore?
Well,
I do so hope that it has something to do with money, my dear Pringle. I simply adore money. It has so many uses, you know.
Baron, I want to talk to you about Ted Johnson. I understand he was doing business with you here in Istanbul.
Ah, yes, yes, yes. Darling Mr. Johnson, what a ghastly thing to happen. So unfortunate, so sad, and so unremunerative to me.
What really happened, Tagore?
He was inconsiderate enough to have himself seized by the Romanian security police before concluding our affairs. I had not made a profit of even a single piastre out of him. It was really terribly inconsiderate.
Yeah, very. How did it happen he was arrested in Romania when his business was with you here in Turkey?
My darling Pringle, all I know is that Mr. Johnson came to me regarding certain silks and perfumes he wished to purchase. I would have made a huge profit on the transaction, but then, before giving me a check, poof, he vanished. So, we have disposed now of Mr. Johnson.
Tagore, we haven't disposed of anything. Now, look here.
Oh, how sweet of you to be so forceful. But you must realize that he will go on trial in Bucharest, confess his crimes in court, and be hanged. Poof.
Just as simple as that.
But of course, there is nothing anyone can do for him now. Not even the magnificent Baron Tagore. Please remember that, darling.
That's right, Mr. Pringle. If you want any dope about people escaping from Romania, the place to go is the Konaksim Cafe down at the docks, at table number 53.
Konaksim Cafe, table 53. Then what?
It's simple. Tell whoever sits down with you that you want to go fishing.
So, you are interested in fishing, Mr. Pringle?
That's right, Miss...
Call me Sarja.
Okay, Sarja. Right now, I'm looking for a guide. Know of any?
Well, there are all kinds of guides, Mr. Pringle. What kind of a catch are you after?
Oh, a big one.
Oh.
Like the one they landed near Harsovia last week. Name of Johnson.
The catching of such a prize is up to the fisherman. All that the owner of a boat can do is take him to the proper fishing grounds.
Well?
I will have my own boat ready to leave in half an hour. We are arriving at our destination, Mr. Pringle.
Arriving? I don't see nothing out there in the darkness, but darkness.
The Romanian coast, are you?
Yes. 13 kilometers southeast of Constanta. The coastline here is deserted. You should have little difficulty in making your way to the railroad.
Good.
The Constanta-Bucharest Express leaves at 9 in the morning.
All right.
From then on, it will be up to you.
Well, thanks for everything, Sarja.
No thanks are necessary. Just leave the boat at once. We are in constant danger every minute we remain here.
Sure. Come on, Fagon.
Oh, look, Mr. Pringle. Why don't I just give you a letter to my cousin Vasily in Bucharest?
Oh, come on.
Okay, okay. Gosh, only a fellow could catch his death of wet feet doing things like this. Oh. Well, I hope you're satisfied now. There goes that luscious cookie Sarja with the boat. Oh, we've jumped right into the frying pan.
Hold it, Pringle.
Huh?
Somebody moving in that brush over there.
You there! Up, I say, in the name of the people's government!
Shut up. He thinks we're over there. Let's get going.
This is Vladimir Polek of the security police. I command you to halt at once!
Security police?
Yeah. Somebody must have tipped him off. Now they'll be on our tail all the way to Bucharest.
Mr.
Oh, I should have my head examined coming along with you this way. How long do we have to stay on that board of this rattletrap train anyways?
We'll be in Bucharest in a few minutes.
So we'll be in Bucharest. So what? It'll only make it easier for that Vladimir Borek to latch on to us.
Not if we can get to Mikhail Andescu first.
Huh? Mikhail Andescu? Who is he?
Ken Thurston and I worked with him in the resistance during the war.
Now, what's a friend of yours doing behind Iron Curtain?
The same thing he was doing then. If there's a prayer of saving Ted Johnson's neck, he'll know the people who can help us.
Oh, so who cares? Can they help us save my neck?
Good afternoon, comrades. As loyal patriots of the People's Republic of Romania, I know you will not mind sharing your compartment with a brother.
A brother?
Why, not at all. Come in.
Thank you. I would not trouble you this way, but I understand that two enemies of the state are traveling with us today.
Oh, I hadn't heard about this. What's going on?
Oh, there is nothing to fear. Naturally, those of us whose identification papers are in perfect order have nothing to be concerned about. Oh, but your pardon for not having introduced myself earlier. I am Vladimir Borek, head of the security police.
Security?
Of course. Two such loyal subjects of our great republic do not mind the slight inconvenience of showing me your identification. Merely a matter of routine, you understand?
Sure. I'll be glad to, Comrade Borek. I have my papers right here.
Oh. What did you want the conk him for? Now he'll be sore on us, and I'll bet he's got plenty of stooges aboard with him.
That's right. So, come on, out this window, Pagan. Huh? Fast, while we still got a chance to find Andescu.
You're sure this is that Andescu's house, Mr. Pringle?
They haven't taken it away from him, it is.
But there's nobody's answering. Oh, he must have gone to a movie or something. He must have pulled.
Welcome, my darling Mr. Pringle. Welcome to Bucharest.
Kagori.
But of course, my dear person. Oh, what a wonderful pleasure it must be for you to see here the magnificent Baron Kagori.
Skip it, Baron. Where's Andescu?
Oh, yes. The poor, unfortunate Mikhail Andescu.
Where is he?
He was most indiscreet. How stupid of him to allow himself to be executed by the security police.
Executed.
Ah, but do not be sad. Is not the magnificent Baron Tagore here to greet you instead? And that must be most reassuring to you, is it not, my darling?
We will continue with The Man Called X in just a moment. Every day you hear more and more about an incredibly fast way to relieve the pains of headache, neuritis, and neuralgia. It's Anacin, A-N-A-C-I-N. Now, the reason Anacin is so wonderfully fast-acting and effective is this. Anacin is like a doctor's prescription. That is, Anacin contains not just one, but a combination of medically proven active ingredients in easy-to-take tablet form. Thousands of people have received envelopes containing Anacin tablets from their own dentist or physician, and in this way discovered the incredibly fast relief Anacin brings from pains of headache, neuritis, or neuralgia. So the next time a headache strikes, take Anacin, A-N-A-C-I-N. Anacin in handy boxes of 12 and 30, economical family-size bottles of 50 and 100. Ask for Anacin at any drug counter. Now, Act Two of The Man Called X, tonight starring John Lund, with Leon Belasco as Pagan Zellschmidt. Bill Pringle has secretly entered Bucharest in an effort to rescue Ted Johnson, who is being held for trial as an American spy at the home of Mikhail Andescu, a member of the underground. They are greeted, however, by Baron Laszlo Tagore, former business associate of Johnson's, who tells them Andescu has been executed by the security police.
Yes, my dear gentlemen, it was most thoughtless of Mikhail to disappoint you this way. But Baron Tagore shall do his magnificent best to make you feel at home. Please to enter and accept my hospitality.
All right, Tagore. Now, what's the pitch?
How sweet of you to ask, my dear Pringle, but there is no one I would rather speak about more than myself. First, however, I should like you to meet some of my friends. This is Anton Barshak.
Gentlemen.
And here we have the taciturn Leonid. And as for the last member of this most distinguished gathering...
Look, it's...
Yeah. How did you get here so fast, Sarya?
Well, when Vladimir Borek's men attacked you at the landing place, I ran you to Laszlo. He flew over from Istanbul, picked me up, and we continued here to Bucharest.
Are you not most magnificently pleased, my dear Pringle?
Yeah. I'm beginning to think I am, Tagore. Maybe Andescu is gone, but looks like he left a pretty good organization behind him.
Yes. We helped you get into Romania, Mr. Pringle. We'll help you to get out.
With Ted Johnson?
What a superfluous question, my dear boy. But of course with darling Mr. Johnson.
That is where Johnson's trial will be held, Bill. In the People's Court, Stalinplatz 7.
Stalinplatz 7, huh? Looks more like a fortress than a court building.
It is. The headquarters of the security police are there. And it is where Johnson is being held prisoner.
Have you learned the name of the trial judge?
But of course, my dear Pringle. He is one Andras Principo, known to his most flattering enemies as the Butcher.
Principo, huh?
Unfortunately, we have been able to ascertain nothing detrimental about his service to the state.
Maybe not, but there's always... Pagan's cousin, Vasily.
Oh, but how would our dear Mr. Zellschmidt's cousin help us in this matter?
If Principo has ever been mixed up with anything crooked in Romania, you can bet your life a Zellschmidt will know about it.
We are here, my friend. Stalinplatz 7.
Good. It's now 10:15. The trial started. Pagan, a few minutes before they recess, at 11:55, have the car at the side entrance.
Huh?
It's your neck if you don't.
I'll be there, Mr. Pringle.
Well, how about it, Laszlo? Everything straight in your mind?
My beloved friend, I can already see the pained look upon poor, dear Judge Principo's face when he enters his chambers after a trying morning upon the bench. Magnificent.
All right. Let's go in.
I can now fully appreciate the wonderful enjoyment experienced by the man in the circus who places his head into the mouth of the lion. The Baron Tagore shall be forever indebted to you.
I'll take a rain check on that, Laszlo. Where are Principo's chambers?
That door with the security police guard standing in front of it. Needless to say, I'm quite relieved to see that he is one of our men.
Mm. Where's the side entrance?
In the short corridor that runs to the left.
Good. We should be able to...
What is it, my friend?
Look, that woman, leaving those offices up ahead.
Hmm?
Isn't she... Oh, I lost her in the crowd around that corner.
As much as it pains me, my darling Pringle, need I remind you that this is a time for affairs of action, not of the heart.
Whose offices are they?
The den of that most vicious of all the Romanian foxes, Vladimir Borek. Surely you do not wish to visit him at a time like this.
No. Just wondering why Sarya would want to visit him.
What? You believe that woman you saw was... Oh, no, my beloved friend. Sarya is making our final arrangements at the airport. You are mistaken.
You better be right, Laszlo, because if you're not... Well, it's too late now. Let's go into the courtroom.
You admit then, prisoner, that you are guilty of the crimes against the state with which you have been charged.
I do.
You confess them freely of your own volition, without duress.
I confess them freely.
Very well. The accused will please state in his own words the actions that led to his arrest upon those charges.
I, Theodore Johnson, a citizen of the United States, was officially assigned the task by my government of entering secretly into Romania. My objective was to perform acts of sabotage against the People's Republic and to learn what military and state secrets I could.
Incredible. Even to me, it is incredible.
I've seen them do it before. They make zombies out of their political prisoners. They always...
What is it?
Vladimir Borek. Going up to the bench. Talking to Principo.
The fox and the butcher failing to observe the rigid protocol of the People's Court. A paradox, my beloved friend, is it not?
Well, they wouldn't be doing it unless there was a pretty strong reason. Oh, start heading for the door.
The proceedings of the People's Court in the matter of the American spy Theodore Johnson will now be recessed. Remove the prisoner.
Come on, let's get out.
Yes, sir. Frankly, you know, it is most distressing to me to be involved in such an undignified flight, but apparently your eyesight is keener than my sense of suspicion. That woman you saw leaving Borek's office...
Yeah, she was Sarya, and she sold us out.
Of course Sarya sold them out, Principo. Why are you so surprised? Did she not obtain Johnson for us so we could use him for our propaganda purposes?
But my dear comrade Borek, it all seems so incredible. A plot to kidnap me, to obtain the release of the American. How did they intend to carry out this fantastic plan?
They had not informed Sarya of the details. That is why I made you halt the proceedings so abruptly. Here in your chambers under my personal protection, you will be quite safe.
Don't be too sure, Borek.
What?
Comrade Borek, this man...
Pringle.
Yes, my darling comrade Borek. And you were the most foolish to attempt to reach for any weapons. This one of mine is equipped with a delicious silencing mechanism.
You cannot frighten Vladimir Borek. My men have this building surrounded. Without official passes, you will never leave here alive.
Thanks for the advice. We'll follow it. After we get through with Principo.
With me, comrades? What is it you wish with me?
Your signature in this custodial release of Theodore Johnson.
Release?
It orders Johnson to be placed in your custody for further questioning before the trial resumes. Sign it.
But...
Sign nothing, Principo. They cannot get away with this.
Do you wish to know something, my darling Borek? Your voice is beginning to irritate me. As much as I detest violence, I'm afraid I must be...
Oh, comrades, please!
All right, Principo. The release. Sign it.
No. I will sign nothing.
You should have thought of that in November of 49.
November 49?
Yeah. Ever hear of a man by the name of Vasily Zellschmidt?
Oh, Zellschmidt. What has he got to do with this?
He had plenty to do with you. And a black market operation in roller bearings. Maybe you'd like to explain to the Politburo how they wound up in Yugoslavia instead of the Romanian factories they were intended for.
I don't know what you're referring to.
There's another little item. June 1950. A shipment of industrial diamonds.
You know.
That turned up in Western Germany instead of Russia. Does the Kremlin know what happened to your bank balance about that time?
You have no proof.
We've got a lot more proof than you have against Ted Johnson. The security police found a way to make him confess. I don't think they'll have too tough a job with you. Well...
All right, I will sign.
I, Theodore Johnson, citizen of the United States, was officially...
Help him into the car, Pagan.
I've got him.
You're next, Principo.
What do you wish with me now? You're
going to be our official passport out of Romania. Get in.
Oh!
Laszlo?
Yes, my beloved friend.
Good. All right, let's head for the airport, fast. Plane's all ready for us?
Yes, it is, however, a Russian-built Tupolev 70. Perhaps I should have inquired earlier as to whether or not you can fly it without me.
It's their copy of our own C-47. I can fly it.
Oh, sure. Only how do we get past all the guards out there in that airport?
The same way we got out of Stalin Plot 7, Principo. He's got the authority. And when it comes to using it or getting purged, we'll get past those guards.
We've been flying for hours already. When do we get to Turkey, anyways?
We'll get there, Pagan.
But I don't like this flying in the clouds all the time. We could bump into something.
We'd bump into a lot more if we flew above them. According to the radio,
Every fighter plane in Romania is up looking for us.
Ooh, don't say things like that. You give my goose pimples. Maybe I should have stayed in Bucharest with that Baron Tagore. Hey! Hey, look! We're out of the clouds.
Yeah, there's the Black Sea. And that's Turkey, dead ahead.
Boy, Turkey. Oh, will I ever be glad to get down on solid firma. Ah, well, I guess we can relax now, eh?
Not quite.
Huh?
Look back, up there to the left.
Those planes, they're diving down on us.
Yeah, two jet fighters, Russian-built MiGs.
Ooh, we gotta do something.
Try hanging onto your hat. The first one's making his pass now.
I'm dead.
Not yet, thank God. Give the second one a chance.
That did it. That did it.
Oh, relax, you idiot. They just hit our engines.
They were going to crash off into the Black Sea.
That's what I hope those MiGs will think. Then maybe they'll... Hey, yeah, they're heading back to Romania.
Hey, you mean we're not going to crash?
I'm
going to
try for a landing beside that Turkish destroyer down there. If we can make it.
Well, what do you know? We made it.
Yeah. Looks like it, Pagan. And that destroyer will pick us up in a minute.
Theodore Johnson, citizen of the United States.
Look. Look, that Mr. Johnson slept all through it. Oh, the poor guy. Boy, what they did do to him there in Big Romania.
Yeah. But he'll be all right once we get him back to the States. Too bad we can't say the same about the others.
Huh? What others?
The millions who are still behind the Iron Curtain. Prisoners of their people's republics. Drugged by propaganda. Tortured by their fears of the secret police. I wonder how long it'll take to make them well again.
Now, here to tell you about next week's program is our star for tonight, Mr. John Lund.
As Herbert Marshall would say, thanks for being with us. Oh, and by the way, my thanks to Will Wright, Lillian Bayef, Parley Bear, Frank Gerstel, Stephen Garay, Lamont Johnson, and, of course, Leon Belasco as Pagan Zellschmidt. Next week, Ken Thurston tangles with a grain black market in India. That's right, Mr. X himself. Because next week, Herbert Marshall will be with you again. So join him, won't you, when he returns as the man called X. Good night.
The Man Called X is the Friday night feature on NBC's five-show festival of comedy, music, mystery, and drama. Brought to you by RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music, first in television. And by the makers of Anacin for fast relief from pain of headache, neuritis, neuralgia. The Man Called X is a J. Richard Kennedy production with music by Milton Charles. Tonight's story was written by Sidney Marshall. John Lund may now be seen in the Paramount production of The Mating Season. All characters and incidents on this program are fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. Be sure to hear The Magnificent Montague with Monty Woolley, formerly heard on Friday, now brought to you as a Saturday night feature of NBC's All-Star Festival. And until next week, same time and station, this is Jack Latham saying good night for The Man Called X. William Bendix stars in The Life of Riley. Enjoy it on NBC.
Now we're up to our final 30-minute program for this week. It's The Mysterious Traveler. And you may remember that The Mysterious Traveler is just that. You'll find him on a train, and he engages you in conversation and a mysterious story, and, well, it's always interesting, so we'll check this week's out, too. From 921 of 48... Death has a thousand faces.
This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, and it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as you hear the story I call Death Has a Thousand Faces. Our story begins at police headquarters in an eastern metropolis. In a small, shabbily furnished office, Horace Riker, a patrol officer for the State Prison Commission, is seated at his desk, which is completely covered with gift packages. As Horace, a small, mild-mannered man in his late 40s, starts to open some of the gifts, there's a knock at his door.
Come in. Oh, hello, Captain.
Hello, Horace. Well, I see none of the boys forgot you. 25 years with the State Prison Commission. That's a long time.
Yes, I never knew I had so many friends. Why, look at all these gifts. There must be at least 20.
Well, here's another one, Horace. This is for me and the other boys in the homicide squad.
Oh, I don't know how to thank you and the others, Captain. You've all been so kind.
Ah, nonsense, Horace. You know how we all feel about you.
I'm really a very lucky man, Captain. I have a job I like, fine friends, and a wonderful wife.
So you and Millie are hitting it off okay, eh?
Of course. I told you it would work out all right, even if I am 20 years older than Millie.
Well, I'm glad to hear I was wrong. Here, let me help you open your gifts.
Well, thanks, Captain.
Well, looks as though half these gifts are boxes of cigars. I'm afraid you'll have to take up smoking, Horace.
Guess you're right. Well, this one doesn't seem to be cigars. Sounds like a clock.
Clock?
Yes, I can hear ticking inside. Doesn't seem to be a card with it. Well, I'll unwrap it. The card is probably inside.
Wait just a minute. Let me see that package.
Why, of course. Here.
Oh, there's a ticking inside, all right. Cheap wrapping paper, no store label, return address. Why should anyone send you a wound-up clock?
Well, maybe they just wound it up to make sure it worked.
I don't like the looks of this.
What do you mean?
Mac, this is Captain Ross calling from Riker's office. Get the bomb disposal squad over here on the double. It's an emergency.
What did you find out, Captain?
Morelli and the bomb disposal squad have just finished. It was a bomb, all right.
Oh, dear me.
Morelli said it was extremely well constructed. If you had opened that package, it would have been blown to bits.
Who could have sent it?
Oh, it's pretty obvious. It must have been sent to you by one of the convicts whose parole you revoked.
You really think that's it?
Of course.
I wonder which one it was.
That's all we'd like to know. There's nothing about that bomb that we can trace. Well, you'll have to be doubly careful from now on.
Doubly careful.
Yes, this con may make another attempt on your life. I'm assigning one of my men to you for protection.
But I don't need protection, and think how frightened Millie would be if she found out.
Now, don't you worry. She won't find out. I'll see to that.
Well, if you think it's best.
Just leave everything to me, Horace. Now, you better run along home.
Millie, where are you?
Oh, here I am. Stop yelling.
Look, Millie, at all the gifts I got from the men at the office. They... Isn't that a new dress you're wearing, darling?
Yes, I bought it this afternoon. How do you like it?
Oh, it's beautiful. You look wonderful in it, Millie. How much did it cost?
$80.
$80?
Yes. It was marked down from 100. I just couldn't resist it.
But, Millie, you bought 2 new dresses just last week.
Well, you can't expect me to go around in rags. I'm sick and tired of having to skimp all the time and never...
No, Millie, if you want to keep the dress, of course you may. The only thing is, I don't know how I'll be able to meet the insurance payment due this week.
You mean, if I keep this dress, you won't be able to make the payment on your policy?
Yes, dear.
Oh. Well, in that case, I'll return it. You must keep up your insurance.
I'm sorry, darling, that you have to return it. I'll try to find a part-time job in the evenings, so we can increase our income. You're going to have everything you want.
Yes, Horace, you're right. I am going to have everything I want. One way or another.
That night, as Horace took Millie out to a movie, They were followed by a detective who Captain Ross had assigned to guard Horace. But as the days slipped by, Horace went about his work as usual, completely disregarding his bodyguard. After 3 weeks had passed and no further attempts were made on Horace's life, the detective was assigned to another case.
Good evening, darling. Sure was hot today, wasn't it?
Yes. Supper will be ready in a few minutes.
All right, dear. Is there any beer in the refrigerator?
Yes, I put 2 bottles in there this morning.
Good. Nothing better than cold beer on a hot day. You want some beer, Millie?
Now, you know I never drink it. It's too fattening.
What did you do today, dear?
What did I do? I went shopping.
Oh, this beer is cold. Makes my eyes ache.
Horace, I can't stand this heat much longer. When are you getting your vacation?
Well, I've been given the second and third weeks in September.
But that's weeks away.
I know, Millie, but I didn't have any choice. I'm sorry that we...
What's wrong?
My heart. It hurts.
That's what comes from drinking beer when you're overheating.
Oh, it feels worse.
Oh, nonsense. You'll be all right in a minute.
Millie, help me. Get a doctor. I can't breathe.
Horace, are you sure you need a doctor?
Yes. Hurry, Millie. Hurry.
How is he, Doctor?
That was a close call, Mrs. Riker. But he'll be all right. You can go in now.
Oh, thank you.
Doctor, I'm Captain Ross, friend of Mr. Riker's.
Oh, how do you do, Captain?
Millie, Mrs. Riker, said it was a heart attack. Is that right?
Yes, Captain, it was a heart attack. Brought on by poison.
Poison?
Yes.
Do you have any idea how it happened?
Yes. Strychnine in the beer. Fortunately for Riker, he only took a sip of the beer. Had he taken any more, he'd be dead. It's a matter for your department, Captain.
Yeah, so it seems.
I'll turn in a report to you.
Thank you, Doctor.
That's quite all right. Well, I've got to leave now. I've got another patient to see. Good night.
Good night, Doctor. Strychnine.
Has the doctor left?
Yes. How's Horace?
Well, he's asleep now.
That beer that Horace drank, when did you get it?
Oh, it was delivered yesterday from the grocery.
Did the delivery boy give it to you directly?
Why, no. He left it on the rear porch. I was out all day.
I see.
What are you getting at?
Horace's heart attack was caused by poison. Poison in the bottle of beer.
Poison?
Mm-hmm.
But who would want to poison Horace?
Oh, maybe it was one of the convicts whose parole he revoked. Then again, it might be someone else.
You have no clues?
No, not yet. But I can promise you one thing. I'll not give up until I've got the person who's trying to murder Horace. Hello, Horace. How are you?
I'm feeling fine, Captain. It's good to be back at work.
Well, sit down, Horace.
Thank you.
I suppose you realize what a close shave you had.
Yes.
Horace, I've got 4 men working on the case day and night. We've been checking on all the convicts whose paroles you've revoked.
Well, that sounds like quite a job.
It is. Naturally, we've been checking other angles as well.
Other angles?
Yes. You understand, of course, it's my duty to investigate every aspect of the case.
Certainly, Captain.
There's nothing personal in what I'm doing. It all comes under routine investigation.
Yes, of course.
But what I'm trying to say, Horace, is I've had one of my men check up on your wife.
On Millie?
That's right.
But that's ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. You have no right
to...
It
isn't ridiculous. We've uncovered some very interesting facts about your wife.
What?
These are the facts. First, your wife worked in an aviation instrument factory during the war. She's a skilled mechanic.
Of course, I know that. It's absurd.
Your wife has the ability to construct a bomb. A bomb such as the one you received.
Are you trying to say it's Millie who's out to murder me?
Let me give you the rest of the facts.
You're out of your mind. How dare you make such an accusation against my wife? How dare you?
Fact number two. 6 months ago, you took out $50,000 worth of insurance on your life. Whose idea was that? How can you possibly afford to carry $50,000 worth of insurance on your salary?
That's none of your business. I refuse to listen any further to these absurd accusations you're making against my wife.
Fact number three. Your wife is two-timing you, has been for months. She's seeing a young man by the name of Jerry Clapper.
I won't take that from anyone, not even you. I'll show you.
No, don't be a fool, Horace. I'm only doing my duty. Now, sit down. Sit down! And stay down. Horace, we've been friends for 20 years. Do you think I'd tell you all this if I didn't have to?
It's lies. All lies.
Fact number four. Your wife's boyfriend works for a medical firm. He has easy access to poisons, including strychnine.
Nothing you're saying is true, nothing. If you were honest, you'd admit that you don't like Millie. You never have. You were dead set against my marrying
That's
her.
That's true, but that has nothing to do with this.
I love my wife and I trust her. I don't believe a word you've told me. If you knew her as I do, you'd know she isn't capable of such a thing.
Are you so hopelessly in love with her that you can't see what I'm telling you is the truth?
It isn't the truth. And nothing you can say will change my mind. And I warn you, Captain, if you spread any of these lies about my wife around, I'll kill you.
With this threat, Horace stormed out of Captain Ross's office and returned to his own. In the days that followed, he avoided Ross, which was soon noticed by his fellow workers. Horace told Millie nothing of the accusations that Ross had made. If anything, he was twice as devoted to Millie as ever. The two spent long hours together making plans for their vacation. The day before they were to leave, Horace was summoned to Captain Ross's office.
You wanted to see me?
Yes, have a seat.
I prefer to stand.
Very well. I understand you're leaving on your vacation tomorrow.
Yes.
Where are you going?
None of your business.
I'm asking you as your superior. We may wish to get in touch with you.
We're driving to Virginia. We're renting the same cottage we had last year.
I see. Have you had any further attempts made on your life?
No.
While you're on your vacation, be careful.
What do you mean by that?
You know what I mean.
If you don't stop insinuating that my wife is trying to murder me, I'll see to it
Just
that you...
Just be careful. That's all I'm asking. I'd like to see you come back.
Is there anything else?
No.
Thank you.
Well, I've warned him.
Ah, this is a life lying peacefully in a hammock far away from everything and everyone. Enjoying yourself, Millie?
Yes, Horace.
Just like our honeymoon, isn't it?
Yes.
And we've done all the same things. We've gone fishing, swimming, boating, and we've tramped all over the countryside. It's been wonderful.
You know, the only thing we haven't done that we did last year is visit the gigantic caverns.
Yes, that's right. I'd forgotten about that. We did visit the gigantic caverns last year, didn't we?
Yes, Horace. Why don't we spend tomorrow exploring the caverns? Do you remember that wonderful waterfall and pool?
Yes, it'll be a lot of fun. Do you remember the way we almost got lost in the caverns last year?
Oh, if you get lost in there, you can wander days without finding your way out.
Well, this time I'm going to be very careful.
Yes, Horace. We've got too much to live for to let anything happen to us.
Well, here's the entrance to the caverns, Millie.
It certainly is deserted, isn't it?
Yes. No one comes here after Labor Day. Now, wait till I tie the end of this string to this tree.
How long is that ball of string?
Oh, about 5,000 feet. Almost a mile. There.
That should be long enough to take us to the waterfall and the pool and the cavern, shouldn't it?
Yes, just about. Are you ready, dear?
Yes, Horace.
I'll carry the flashlight. Your eyes will become accustomed to the darkness in just a minute. Cool in here, isn't it?
Yes. The only thing I don't like about these caverns are the rats running around. And the bats.
Oh, they won't bother you.
Do you want me to unwind the ball of string for you?
No, Millie, I can manage nicely. This place is fascinating. I'm certainly glad you suggested this little trip there.
Business cavern. I must be 200 feet.
Yes, these caverns get more interesting as you pass from one to another.
However, I'm afraid we can't go much further. We've about reached the end of the string.
But, Horace, I wanted to see the waterfall and the pool.
Oh, I should have brought along another ball of string.
Why are you stopping?
I've reached the end of the string.
Horace, listen a moment. Do you hear the waterfall?
Yes, I think I do.
It sounds as though it's directly ahead. Let's keep going a little further.
But, darling, there isn't any more string.
Oh, we'll only go a little way. It doesn't sound very far off. We'll be able to find our way back.
Well, all right. Wait till I tie the end of this string around this rock. There. Come along.
We've come quite a way, but here it is.
Yes.
Shine your flashlight down on the pool, Horace.
All right.
It must be quite deep.
Yes. What are you thinking of, darling?
If a person fell into the pool, there'd be no way to get out. The walls of the pool are sheer rock. There'd be no way of climbing up them.
Yes, that's right. What makes you think of it, darling?
I don't know. Standing here or looking down at the pool, it just comes to mind.
It couldn't be that perhaps you want to get rid of me.
Oh, Horace, how can you say such a thing?
It could be, couldn't it? After all, I'm 20 years older than you. I'm not good looking and I haven't any money.
Oh, don't talk like that.
Why not? It's true, isn't it? My friend Captain Ross thinks it's you who's made the two attempts on my life.
I?
Yes. Ross said that you could have constructed the bomb that was sent to me and have poisoned the beer I drank.
How dare he say such a thing?
He claims you're after my insurance. And, of course, he mentioned the man you've been seeing, Jerry Clapper.
He told you about Jerry?
Yes.
Horace, you don't believe that I sent you that bomb or poisoned the beer, do you?
No, Millie. I know you didn't.
Oh, it's good of you not to think so.
You may want me dead, Millie, but I know it wasn't you who made the attempts on my life.
How can you be so sure?
It's very simple, Millie. Because it was I who sent the bomb to myself and poisoned the beer.
You?
Yes.
But why?
Why? You're in love, Millie. You should know to what lengths love can drive a person. In that horrible moment 7 months ago when I found out you were deceiving me, I came close to killing you.
Horace!
Does it surprise you that a mild little man my age could feel so deeply? But then I realized that wasn't the way.
That wasn't the way?
No. I began to formulate a plan, a very clever plan. First, I took out a $50,000 life insurance policy with you as beneficiary. Several months later, I followed that up by sending myself a bomb, and shortly afterwards, I poisoned my beer.
But why did you do all that?
I knew that sooner or later, my friend Captain Ross would come to believe that it was you who was attempting to kill me. And that's exactly what happened.
But why? Why?
It was all part of the perfect buildup. The buildup that had led to this moment.
What?
Yes, Millie. You're going to die. Here and now.
No, Horace. No.
I loved you so, Millie. I loved you so.
Horace, don't come near me. Don't touch me.
Where's Jerry? Let him save you. I wasn't good enough for you, was I? But you need me now, don't you?
Horace! Help me! Help me!
Millie? She's gone. I better get out of here. As soon as I get back to the cottage, I'll call the sheriff and tell him. tell him my story. He'll believe it, particularly after he talks to Captain Ross. There won't be any trouble. After all, I'm just a mild little man in his late 40s. I'm not the type who can love deeply or hate deeply. Well, at least she found out before she died. Now, let's see. Here are three paths. Which one is it that will lead me to the string? It's the one on the left. Yes, that must be it. It's about a half mile from here to where the string ran out. Then I follow the string for a mile, and I'll be at the entrance. Strange, I don't remember this turn in the path. But then I may not have noticed it before. This must be the right path. But then they all look so much alike. These caverns are just a maze of passageways. Maybe I took the wrong path. Perhaps I should have taken the middle one. Yes. Yes, it must be the middle one. I'd better retrace my steps. All I have to do is keep calm and I'll be all right. People only get lost when they're excited. I just have to go back to where the three paths are and take the middle one. I mustn't get excited.
Horace Riker ignored the rapid beating of his heart and attempted to remain calm. But as he made his way along, he was constantly confronted with diverging and crisscrossing passages, all of which looked unfamiliar. After wandering for an hour, his flashlight burned out and he could no longer go on. Exhausted, he sank down to the ground, completely losing all track of time. Meanwhile, the absence of the Rikers from their cottage went unnoticed. It was only after the fifth day that it was discovered they were missing. The countryside was searched without any success. Captain Ross flew to Virginia to aid in the search. Then someone remembered the gigantic cavern. A week from the day he'd entered the caverns, Horace Riker was found semi-conscious, babbling deliriously. He was rushed to a hospital, but the search for his wife went on.
You may go in now, Captain Ross.
Thank you, nurse. Hello, Horace. How are you feeling?
Captain Ross, what are you doing here?
I flew down here 2 days ago to help in the search. I was with the party that found you in the gigantic caverns.
Millie, did you find her?
Yes.
How is she?
She's dead.
Dead?
They found her body in a large pool by a waterfall.
Poor Millie.
Suppose, Horace, you tell me exactly what happened.
The whole idea of visiting the gigantic caverns was Millie's. When we got to the entrance, I led the way in, while Millie unrolled the ball of string behind me. After we'd gone a mile, the string ran out. In the distance, we could hear a waterfall. Millie insisted that we go on, though I argued it was dangerous.
What did she say to that?
She said she'd mark the path with her lipstick as we went along, and we could find our way back to the string that way.
I see.
We must have gone about a quarter of a mile when I suddenly realized Millie was no longer following me. I turned, but she was gone. Then I called out to her. I could hear her laughing in the distance and telling me to find my own way out.
What did you do then?
I'm afraid I got panicky. In that moment, I realized everything you told me was true. I tried to follow Millie's laughter, but it seemed to come from all directions. As I tried to retrace my steps to the string, I became completely lost. And that's all I remember.
I see. Despite the lipstick marks she made as a trail, Millie apparently became lost when she ran away from you.
Yes. Captain, I want to apologize for not having believed you. I hope there aren't any hard feelings.
None at all, Horace. I'm just glad I was one of the party who found you before it was too late.
I suppose I was in a bad way when you found me.
Mm-hmm. You were semi-conscious, slowly sinking. By the way, Horace, this will interest you.
Well, what's that?
It's a phonograph recording. I'll play it for you. I had it made just after you were brought to this hospital. Listen.
No, I wasn't good enough for you, was I?
Why, that's me.
I gotta find my way out of here. Do you think that all these months I haven't known what's been going on, eh? I may not be young or good-looking like your Jerry, but I have brains. So dark here. So dark. It took brains to work all this out. First the insurance, then the bomb, and poison beer. And now this, Millie. Just the way I planned it. You're drowning, Millie. You're drowning. And they'll never find out, Millie. I'm too clever for them.
Yes, Horace, you are clever. I must apologize. I completely underestimated you. If you hadn't been delirious when we found you, I'd never have known that you murdered Millie.
Perfect blueprint for murder. Only he left no margin forever. How was he to know that he would confess all while delirious? Oh, you have to get off now. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time.
Well, we've heard some fine stuff today, and we'll be back next week with much more, so join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.